Welcome to the Rock Church and World Outreach Center. We pray that this message will strengthen and encourage you. Now here's a message from one of the pastors here at the Rock.
Amen and amen. All right, well, let's jump in today. Like I mentioned, you know, King David. I mean, gosh, how do you get any better? You know, Pastor Powell, if you were here last week, you probably heard Pastor Powell sharing about how David was an influencer, about how, you know, from the beginning of his life, even to today, David has a resounding influence. I mean, for goodness sakes, getting into the lineage of Jesus, getting into like the genealogy, I mean, that's a big deal. You know, it's not like anybody's just allowed into that thing, and here he is being a great part of it. I mean, that's huge. And then you look at David's life, and you just think to yourself, gosh, I want to be that. But then the beauty of it within the Bible is the Bible has no intents and purposes to kind of whitewash and kind of like put lipstick on the pig, you know? I mean, it just kind of presents all of its heroes and its goodness and its badness and their warts and all. And I don't know about you, but it makes me feel a little bit better about myself. And you have this moment where David is even called a man after God's own heart. I mean, come on. If you're going to have something go on your gravestone, I mean, that's what you want on there. And from the very beginning, what it tells each and every one of us, that if God's after something, then it's after, he's after presence in our life more than performance. Because if that can be what's said about King David, that he's a man after God's heart, and if you've ever read the Bible, then you know the story that of his ups and downs, the roller coaster life that he lived in these moments. If you don't, then all I gotta tell you is his life would make a great movie that would probably be rated R. Okay, so he's just a rough guy, and God decides to give him this label. You know, the title of this series is called The Shepherd King. You know, David comes from this lowly idea of being a shepherd, of taking care of, you know, dumb animals. You know, he's a farm boy. You know, if we were being derogatory, you'd probably want to call him a redneck, you know. And he goes from there to becoming the king, the top dog, the commander in chief. And this is his life story. Like, it's bizarre. It's wild when you look at it. And it's all wrapped up in the fact that David knew what really counted. And when you look at this stuff, it tells me two things, especially when you look at David's life and the fact that God used David in spite of David. You begin to find that two things, at least in my heart, begin to happen. Number one is, it makes me feel good about myself, because if he can use a screw-up, a mess-up, a jack-up like David, then he can use a short kid from baseline like me to do something good, right? And then what he does also is it points to something greater. Because if all these great things happen, God uses me in spite of me, and he's able to do it, it says that I can look forward to somebody that's greater than I am, and that I don't have to do it alone. I mean, even with David in his life, that's what David says. You know, David's life speaks to us that God can use anybody, and that the only reason he can use anybody is because God's bigger, smarter, greater, faster, stronger, more wonderful than each and every one of us put together. There's a lot of hope in that kind of stuff. I don't know about you. And it all rests on this idea that if you're to have victory in your life, if you're to be kind of like a King David, if you're gonna be a person that's gonna follow after God, you've got to recognize that God desires presence over performance. It's this whole idea of what grace really is, which is nice, because when I really think about it, you know, some of the stuff I love to see on the internet or TV shows are these ideas like that are called like nailed it, right? Nailed it. If you've ever been on Pinterest, or if you've ever seen like these wonderful cooking shows or these American Idol type shows, you see all these people with all this talent. And all these people with this talent, whether it's baking or cooking, you know, things, or making candy, you know, or singing these songs and belting out these tunes or doing dance moves, you think to yourself, man, that's amazing. And then you see other people trying to do it, and you recognize it's not as easy as it looks. You know, I'm super blessed to have the wife that I do, because she can bake anything and she can do it better than any store I've ever been to. You know, she made these pumpkin scones just the other day, and I was like, whoa, Starbucks who? Hello. And it's just phenomenal. When I look at the things that I make, I'm lucky to make the Blue Box Kraft macaroni and cheese. You know, that's like We're like, if I'm praying and fasting, I can make macaroni cheese on a good day, all right? And it's just like, boil. Oh, watch out, house is on fire. So, and with each and every one of us, that's I don't know, but it's the story of my life. I mean, when I look at my life, I begin to say, gosh, what can I really do? I don't know if you've ever felt like being the one talent person, like I might be good at one thing in my life. You know, I remember I tried out for sports, I just couldn't make it. You know, basketball, forget about it. 5'8", you know, no, I'm sorry, I'm lying. 5'6", not gonna happen, okay? There's the height to talent ratio is not there. I mean, I tried saxophone for 2 weeks, didn't happen. Sorry, Dad, I apologize. You know, it's like, all right, Richard, what can you do? Like, I'm really good at reading. I'm really good at drinking coffee. And I'm really good at taking tests. So if you ever need anybody to cheat off of, that would be me, okay? And you know, you come down and you think, gosh, what can I really do? I mean, and I say this to all of my shower singers out there. If you're like a shower singer and you're like, Pastor Richard, I'm hoping that the sound person turns the volume up really loud today because I don't want to bother the people around me. You know, that's me all the time. I mean, thank God that they put the words up there. Otherwise, I'd end up singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star in the middle of every worship song. And you begin to say, gosh, what am I really good at? What is this that... God, you know, the Bible says that you've given us all talents, so where's mine? And this is where you begin to find victory in your life, especially when it comes to you look at people like King David, or you look at people like yourself, or the heroes of faith around you. The beauty of it all rests in this idea of grace, because as soon as you recognize that you can't, you enable God to say, I can. You see, it all boils down to the moment, the faster you can get to I can't is the faster you can get to he can. You see, we need to embrace our limitations. Embrace our limitations to the very fact that God, I need you to do what I can't. And if you're like me, that's a whole lot. So it all boils down to finding out, God, what's been holding me back? What's been my excuse? What's been my reason I can't do it? I remember reading a story about one of my good friends from the 1800s, a fellow named George Stott, and he was a Scottish school teacher. Well, he tripped and fell when he was 19. He was clumsy. And he got an infection on his leg. It caused him to have an amputated leg. So here you are in the 1800s where it's not a very accessible society, and the man has to live his life with one leg. In a pit of depression because his life felt like it was over, he cries out to Jesus. Jesus changes his life. And George Stott, he decides to do something radical. Him and his wife, they decide that God's calling them to a mission field, to go to China, a really dangerous place to be in the 1800s. So they go for the interview, and there the man, Hudson Taylor's interviewing him, and he's looking at his situation, he's looking at his life, and he says to himself, gosh, you're like a liability here with this handicap. He asks George Stott, he says, why should I let you with one leg go to China with me? And George Stott answers, he says, well, because I don't see people with two legs going. He says, I think you should let me go with one leg then. And that was the end of the interview because he went. You know, George Stott recognized that my limitation may physically limit me, but it doesn't have to stop the call of God on my life. Because the sooner I can get to I can't, the sooner I can get to he can. And the church he helped to found 150 years later is still active today. There's a couple thousand people in this church in China, and it's doing great and mighty things in this region, all because of a Scottish teacher who only had one leg and refused to let his I can't stop him. So let's take a look at this. King David, right? Now, we're talking about King David, so we've gotta go 1 Samuel 17, okay? You just can't do it. You just can't do a series on David without talking about good old David and Goliath, right? But get a hold of this. I want you to get a hold of the message of grace found within this story. Because the sooner you can recognize that God's looking for his presence in your life to do something great, the quicker you can get on to beginning to see and activate these victories in your life. Now, David and Goliath, if you're not familiar with the story, it's really simple. The Philistine armies, the Bible's bad guys, show up on one ridge of a valley. God's people, Israel, and their army show up on the other ridge of a valley. And right there in the middle is where the great smackdown is supposed to happen, the original fight club. One champion from each army is supposed to come down and duke it out, representing all the power, all the authority, all the goods that each army had to offer. Now, the problem is this, is Goliath was huge. You know, anywhere from 8 to 13 feet tall, you take your pick, you take your translation. The guy was just big, especially considering the average man back then was my size. So if you're 6 feet tall, you're doing pretty good and looking giant to me, okay? So here you go. The greatest battle warrior that the Philistines had to offer, the great sea people that decimated nations, is there standing in the middle of this valley. And Israel's scared witless. None of their military officers, none of their grunts, nobody wants to go out. I mean, even King Saul, the tallest guy they had, King Saul was like, you know, I'm gonna do a hard pass on this. And they're waiting day after day after day after day. It says in 1 Samuel 17:11, it says, when Saul and Israel heard the words of this Philistine Goliath, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. It sounds like a place any of us have been to, where you just feel like you can't do it, you can't get through, you can't make it happen. But then this little boy David, this teenager David, rolls through, one of their own, but not part of the military, kind of an insider, but not really fully an insider, kind of an outsider. He didn't really belong there, but he decided to show up anyway. And David rolls in and begins to tell people, hey, what's going on? Nobody's gonna do this? Well, I guess I'll do it, right? But we're losing anyway. What do you got to lose worse than this, right? David rolls in, tries on the king's armor, doesn't really fit very well. His brothers are making fun of him. He goes down and he finally decides to just do what he knows best, and goes down into the middle of the valley, chases down this giant with a slingshot and a rock, launches it, hits the giant right in the forehead, and the man falls down. It says in 1 Samuel 17, it says, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of this giant. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine. Saul said to David, well, you're not able to go against him and fight with him because you're just a youth, but he's been killing people since he was your age. It continues on in 1 Samuel 17:51. It says that David ran and stood over that Philistine after he sunk that rock in his head, after he concussed him something bad. And he stood over his sleeping body. He took the giant's sword, drew it out of the sheath, killed him, cut off his head. Now this is a rad story already. And it says, when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, the entire army fled. And the men of Israel and the men of Judah rose with a shout, and they began to pursue the Philistines as far as Gath, as far as the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded of the Philistines, these bad guys, they fell on the way from Sharim as far as Gath and Ekron. They were on the run, getting cut down left and right. And it says the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines. And on the way back, they plundered the camp. They took ground and took the plunder. They took the riches. Now, this is a pretty rad story. And I've heard it a million times ever since I was young, and I didn't even grow up in church, you know? And we get really familiar with the story, but sometimes what can happen is, and Pastor Jim was talking about it this morning, familiarity can breed contempt. You can kind of lose what the story is really trying to say with us. So I want to take a look at this, because if you're anything like me and you watch movies and you watch sports and you do stuff like this, every time you watch a movie, I mean, some of my younger folks, if you ever play a video game, what happens is you're always cast as the hero in the game, right? When you watch a movie, you know, one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite actors is Will Smith. You know, I love, you know, I Am Legend. It's oldie but a goodie. You know, Independence Day, the man saved the world from the aliens, right? I mean, you look at Men in Black, all these kind of things, and I think I am Will Smith. Whenever I watch a movie, I'm Will Smith. Pursuit of Happiness, that's me, okay? I was down, but I ain't out, right? That was me crying in the bathroom. Is it alright? You know, I'm Will Smith. I don't know if you realize that, but that's the way it is. I mean, and you're the same way. When you see the movie, the zombie movie, you're the guy standing on top, and you're just kicking butts and taking name, right? That's who you are. Whenever you read a story, you're the hero of the story, and it's a beautiful thing. I mean, if you've ever, you know, I remember watching, racing movies, and you leave the movie theater, and you're just driving a little faster, changing lanes a little quicker. You know, you just have this like enlarged view of yourself, like I'm the baddest. And maybe that's why we like movies, because it makes us feel bigger than we really are. And we could do the same thing in Bible stories too, right? Like, that's me, I'm killing giants, I'm taking names, I'm running people down, yeah! A couple months ago, I was reading the story, and I was looking at it, doing what it is, me, Will Smith, starring Will Smith as David. And I just stopped, and I thought to myself, I don't know if I'm David. When you really look at it, like, I have a problem with conflict. I have a tendency to run away from it instead of running to it. And I'm like, I don't know if that would be cast as a very good David. So I begin to look at the story, look at that moment, and I begin to think, okay, well, I'm not Goliath. I'm not Saul, because he's kind of a jerk. And I know I'm not that big of a jerk, right? God, who am I in this story? And then it hit me. I saw myself in this story at the top of the ridge with the army of Israel. And I said, if I look like anybody in this story, it's probably one of those guys looking at my problems, scared. I've lost heart, I've been dismayed. And I said, you know, God, if there's anybody that I really, really resonate with in this moment, it's these guys in 1 Samuel 17 that are scared out of their mind. And it kind of a depressing thought until I recognized, wait a minute, if I'm up here, then who's down there? And then it began to hit me that King David was the shepherd king. And the beauty of it is that David is a type that points forward as a shepherd king to the shepherd king. I thought to myself, if I'm part of the army of Israel, then that's Jesus down there in the valley. Jesus is fighting my battle for me. When I'm scared, when I'm dismayed, when I recognize that I don't measure up to the giant standing in front of me, when I am too scared to fight my own battles and I'm not strong enough, and the person I was hoping for, King Saul, to fight that battle for me, when even he doesn't measure up, I finally began to recognize that this story means something a little bit more, not different, but more than what I've always read it as. And there's Jesus in the middle of the valley alone, standing, taking out the enemy for me. You see, I began to recognize that Jesus is the one that goes in front of me. I'm not Will Smith, Jesus is. Wait, don't write that one down. Don't write that one down. Don't write that one down. Now, if anybody ever comes back and they begin to preach that you're David, that's okay. They can do that too. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that the Bible's like onions. Like there's always another layer to pull it on. I heard that from a very wise sage called Shrek. But the Bible, Pastor Dan says, the Bible is one interpretation, many applications. And this is one way of looking at this, is recognizing that when you feel like the giants before you are too big, that's all right. That's all right, because Jesus is doing something that we could never do. Because let's face it, had anybody else gone into that valley, they would have got creamed. Had even King Saul gone into that valley, he would have been laid out like a sack of potatoes. But Goliath could only be defeated by one, our little boy David, the unlikely hero who came from behind. Now, I want you to get a hold of this. Here it says in 1 Samuel 17, 51, it says, David ran, stood over the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of his sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose up with a shout, and they pursued the Philistines as far as Gath, the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Sherem to Gath and Ekron. Now, here's what we're gonna do, is I wanna take this story of David, and I wanna take the story of Jesus, and I wanna just do this. You know, when I first started coming to church, it was back in the 90s, and what we would do before we had these is we had a projector. And you'd get these clear pieces of plastic and you would put stuff on it and you would put them on the projector. And then that was what they would do. This was the high-tech ministry we had back in the 90s, was the projector operator. And you had this wonderful woman and she had the transitions down. you know, and the bad ones were the ones that would overlap them, so you couldn't really read anything, you know. And that's the way it worked out. So I want to do that. I want to do that with this story, with David's story and Jesus' story. I want to do the projector thing where we take these two ideas and I want to put them this way, because David's a type. He's a kind of person that points to the victory of Jesus. You see, it says that David went down to that valley. He took his sling and he slayed the giant. He killed him and cut off his head. You know, it's a beautiful thing to recognize what Jesus did for us, because where did Jesus go? Jesus went to the place of the skull on a cross, and there he died. When he died, he brought us victory. How did he do that victory? If we know from Genesis, he crushed the head of the serpent. And here, what you can recognize is this, is Goliath represented everything that was good and powerful, the authority of the entire army. We know that because they said whoever wins, wins everything. And here David comes in and he slays the giant. When he slays the giant, all the army is frightened. They're scared witless. So what do? Their power has been stripped. Their authority has been stripped. Every ounce of courage has been stripped from them as they watch the head of their giant, of their captain, that they watch the life being taken away from the commander that they were given, and they ran and fled, and that empowered the entire army, the place where I stood in my mind, to come down and pursue and chase them down. In Colossians, it says this about Jesus. It says that he made a show. It says that he disarmed the rulers and the authorities. He put them to an open shame by triumphing over them in Jesus. You see, on that moment in the cross, every problem you had was won, defeated. It's already been beaten. Because on that cross, Jesus died and rose again, and he defeated the big ones: death, hell, sin, shame. There, the head was cut off of the enemy. And if everything, all the power was stripped from our problems, now they're just a shadow of what they used to be. Now you can say with it, no matter what thing is holding back, what addiction, what challenge, what frustration, what level of guilt or shame that you carry, what you brought in from your past into your present doesn't have to go to your future. Why? Because it's just a shadow, a shell of an enemy that we've been called to walk in the victory and overcome, because he has put to shame every evil, every wrong, every problem, challenge that stands in our life. It has been stripped of its power. See, that's the beauty of grace, is it's about presence. Jesus showed up. David showed up. And his presence is what brought the victory. It wasn't the performance because Saul couldn't do it. It wasn't the performance because you can't do it. It wasn't the performance because we'll never be good enough, smart enough, cute enough. We'll never make enough money. We'll never be smart enough, get enough degrees. You'll never get your kids to act nice enough, and the supervisor will never like you enough to meet your needs and make your dreams come true. There's only one person in all of creation that can do anything and beyond our wildest imagination, that's Jesus Christ. You see, it's not about our performance. What I can do is about what he can do. The quicker you can get to I can't, the quicker you can get to I can. You see, that's the beauty of it, is Jesus won the victory on the cross, gave it to us. David destroyed the giant there, and then what happened? All the army inherited his victory and began to chase the enemy down. It's kind of funny, you know. You think sometimes I become a Christian and everything's supposed to be wonderful. You know, I'm riding on rainbows. I'm sitting on clouds. Everything I do is great. You know, I mean, you know, anything you reheat in the microwave will taste just like you pull it out of the oven, which is not true. And you begin to think, man, what? I got saved. How come all my problems started here? Everybody started getting on my case as soon as I became a Christian. And you look at this moment, Goliath was dead, but the army had to be taken care of. Right? They had to be chased down. I love the way it describes it. It says that they were wounded. And I love it because it wasn't like they all, you know, like in those movies, they all ran into the middle and they're like, and fighting and chopping. And it's like, you know, Lord of the Rings, yeah. It wasn't that. That's not the way the battle went. It was one-sided. It looked more like this. The the army of Israel coming down and chasing down the already defeated army, coming back when they were done wiping the floor at them and picking up the plunder and taking back land. Pushed them as far back as Gath. Do you know where Gath was? Gath was where Goliath came from. It was his hometown. Goliath from Gath. Could you imagine them? Could you imagine them chasing the armies down? I'm sure somebody back there who really likes souvenirs grabbed the armor, maybe grabbed the shield, and they're running, they're chasing them back down to Gath, and like, yeah, let's get them, just chop them down, you go after it. You know, it's just, I mean, it's just an amazing action movie in my head, and they're chasing him down, and all of a sudden they reach Gath, and they're trying to climb into the gates, and they're like, let me in, these guys are crazy, and then all of a sudden they show up, and they're like, do you remember this? I can imagine my head. This is the way the movie goes in my head. They hold up his armor. Do you remember this? Does this look familiar? Because we beat him, your greatest warrior. We got victory. Does this look familiar? Because we're taking back what you tried to take from us. You tried to get it from us. You tried to enslave me. You tried to change the way I think. You tried to tell me I was a loser. Your best came after me, and I didn't, but my champion came, and he gave me the victory. And I've come back to show you. Addiction couldn't have me. A divorce can't take me out. My bills, they can't have me either. The fact that my child hasn't called me in 10 years, it won't stop me. Because my enemy, even though he's real, is only a shadow of what he used to be. I'm gonna tell you this today, that God's already given you the victory. It gets better because they chased him to Gath and they chased him to the gates of Ekron. Ekron's a funny place. They believed that the God, little g God, the Beelzebub lived there. And Jesus in the New Testament calls Beelzebub Satan. They chased him to the hometown of Gath where Goliath was. Then they made a quick stop over to Ekron, the gates of Ekron in 1 Samuel 17:53. And they went to Satan's home, to the gates of hell. And they said, remember this? You tried to get me, but it didn't work. Not because of me, but because the one who fights for me is greater than you. And the beauty is Jesus says, I will put my church right here and we will chase the enemy down back to the gates of hell, because the gates of hell will not prevail against the church of God. And the beauty of it is this, is if this story has any bearing on that story, the gates of hell are not coming back after us. We're not holding them back at bay. If we're the army of the living God, then we're coming down the valley and we're chasing them down saying, come at me, bro, because I got you. I'm coming for you. You can't stop me. And we get to bring the victory to the very place it started. That moment in your childhood that you can't let go. I'm giving it back because Jesus has destroyed and defeated the enemy. And my job as the army is to clean up the mess because they're already wounded. You see, when you accept this gift of grace that's God's victory, it activates a faith inside of each and every one of us. It says in 1 Samuel 17, it says, Saul, the king, and all the army were greatly afraid. They were dismayed. Their hearts were broken. Come on, somebody in this place with a broken heart, your heart was broken. And then David, Jesus, shows up. And he stares down the giant. And then something began to change. See, that victory that you didn't earn, the victory that we don't deserve, the victory that was handed to us like a gift. David killing that giant, it inspired and brought the faith of each and every military member on that ridge and said, we can do this, we can take this, we can make this happen, because if he's leading us, I'll go wherever he takes me, because this is the guy that kills giants. So wherever Jesus takes us, we begin to have our faith activated, because wherever he goes, there his victory is. Wherever, whatever challenge or problem is put before him, Jesus handles it. He takes that challenge and turns it into a testimony that makes himself look bigger and greater than we've ever imagined, and then he shares it with us. See, if you accept God's gift of grace, his empowerment to do his job, it activates a faith inside of us, and it says, well, if he's going, then I'm going. As long as I stay behind this guy, then I'm doing pretty good. It's the fuel that propels me into the impossible. And David knew this. He said he wrote in one of his poems, one of his psalms, he says in Psalms 20, verse 7, he says, now some people trust in chariots. Some people trust in horses. But I'm going to trust in the name of our Lord God. It's exactly what he said when he ran into there and chased down the giant. He said, I come to you in the name of our Lord. And he brought that victory. That's something that we can recognize, because God's after presence, not performance. When I'm trying to perform, I always end up short. But when I look for God's presence in my life, when I make my presence known next to him, then I begin to operate in grace, activates faith, and victory begins to be a part of the way I live life. But it all starts with you recognizing that you can't. You can't get through this depression, but you can follow him through to a place of joy. You can't bring your kids back home, but you can follow him into a place of forgiveness, restoration, reconciliation, a place where you can have the courage to make the phone call first. You can follow him into a place of blessing in your workplace, where you can love your enemies, where you can work and perform underneath his grace to do the things that you've always desired to do. The excuses begin to fade away. Like our friend George Stott, there's no reason he should have been able to go into a dangerous place where there was wars and challenges. There's no reason that a school teacher from Scotland can make his way all the way to China and start a church that's lasting over 150 years later with thousands of people being changed in a communist society. There's no reason that should happen. But the fact that he recognized his limitations allowed God to put them on him as a platform to shine his goodness is what caused these things to happen. Our faith is activated by his grace. And they chased him down. And it says that they plundered them. They did two things. They took ground and they inherited blessing. Both that they didn't earn was given to them because they had faith following the shepherd king. If David's life can teach us two things, it's the fact that Jesus is fighting my battles and I'm just inheriting the cleanup. And then when I do that, when I follow Jesus, because grace doesn't say I can get away with anything. Grace just says that I'm empowered to do anything. I can go forward in God's grace and have faith to do what I thought was impossible. There's this moment with Jesus. We'll wrap up with this. There's this moment with Jesus. And with Jesus, he comes down the mountain. His disciples are in a big fight with these Pharisees and stuff like that. You know, no big deal. Just Jesus followers getting in fights with people, you know, whatever. Sounds like us today. And, you know, I'm sure it probably was on Facebook or something like that. And they're trying to figure out why the disciples couldn't heal this boy. Jesus comes down the mountain. And he says, what's going on here, guys? He said, your disciples, they can't heal this boy. Jesus, oh, okay. What's your little faith? But if you have faith in the mustard seed, wait a minute, hold on, that doesn't make sense. The reason you couldn't heal him because you didn't have enough faith, if you only had a little bit of faith, but if you have faith in the mustard seed, which is little, then we can do this. Jesus heals, casts a demon out of the boy, he's healed. Everybody's excited. The disciples are like, what's going on? You see, I think what's happening here is that it wasn't the size of faith, because their faith was too little and the mustard seed is just a little bit of faith. I believe the challenge was this, is that the miracle didn't happen until Jesus came onto the scene. He comes down the mountain onto the scene and slays the giant. I think the challenge was that their little faith didn't have Jesus in it. But once their little faith saw the presence of Jesus, the miracle happened. Jesus says something like, you know, he says in Matthew 17, he says, well, this kind only comes out with prayer and fasting. Well, what does prayer and fasting do? Brings the presence of Jesus into this place. See, a little faith in Jesus is greater than a lot of faith in yourself. A mustard seed of faith in Jesus is greater than a mountain of faith in myself. I'm gonna tell you this, it's not performance. So stop beating yourself up. It's presence. And the quicker you can realize that I can't do this, I can't grow this, I can't change this, and you rest in the fact that God's going to move on my behalf and I'm gonna do the work following him, then we begin to see miraculous changes. I remember praying for a young man thinking, gosh, I don't know if this is gonna work. If you ever wonder what's going on in a pastor's head sometimes, it's like, hey, I don't know if this is gonna work. He's like, yeah, football accident, this and that and the other and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, okay, cool. Well, let's pray. I was like, all right, God, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I can't do this. We prayed. And I said, hey, how you feel? He's like, I feel great. I'm like, nah, you don't gotta lie to me. How you feel? Pastor, you know, oh, ye of little faith. He's like, no, dude, I feel I can move, I can do this, I can everything. And it's like, you know what? You know, God, thank you. Because I'm gonna put my faith out there and you're responsible to do all the results. Your grace to do what I can't do will allow me the faith to go forth and do what only you can do. And that's the beauty of it all, is that if I allow Jesus to fight my battles, then I can follow through with him and clean up, take ground, and inherit the blessing. Because it's never been about me in the first place. If you guys got something out of God today, let's give him a praise.
Thank you for listening to the Rock Church and World Outreach Center. If this message spoke to you, please share it with us. We'd love to hear from you. You can find more information at www.rockchurch.com.